24th horror show with your host, that's right, is Baron Craze, a complete psychotic to some of you and a total horror historian to the rest. Well, I know it's not Friday night, and it's actually Saturday night, and it's been an interesting time of it, as you can expect. If you've been seeing the post up on Facebook, we didn't know if we were going to even have a show, because Blog Talk Radio is a nightmare. Seriously, if someone wanted to make a movie, they can make a movie about the Blog Talk Radio nightmare. And here's a site that is constantly crashing on the weekends. And well, how do we know this? Because it happened to us last Sunday night, and now it's happened to us this Saturday night. Now, who knows what's going to happen next? Now, I wanted to do the show last night, but I was a little bit of under the weather. And I just don't like to do a show when I'm just trying to drag it out, and I'm not doing well. I got to give it all I got. And last night, I could give you about 20%. And that was hard to give you that. So you know what? Let's not try to push the show, and let's just back it off, and we'll do it again, you know, and try for tonight. We're trying to arrange for one of our guests to get on the show, director named Matt Frame, who did the Camp Death in, what is it, Camp Death in 2D, I think is how he calls it. We're going to work to get him on the show. We've got a couple other filmmakers that we are working with to get them on the show. Now, we are coming up, a couple programming notes on our Friday night switch arounds. Now, what does that really mean? Well, instead of the show going off at 6:30, usually on a Friday night, we're looking to be starting a little bit earlier. That's right, we're looking to be starting between 4:30 and 5 o'clock. Now, why is that? Well, as many of you know, I do a huge fundraiser for the MS. That's multiple sclerosis, and I do this one actually for the Association of America. Anyway, this particular organization that I do this for, this is my sixth year. Over the past 5 years, I've raised a total of about $15,000. So I'm doing this again to raise money. I know it's not a lot, but hey, you know, everything helps in life. So with that, I have to go out. I got to meet with people to get them all organized for this event. So with that being said, the Baron's Crypt will be moving to basically 4:30, 5 o'clock starting time on Fridays going forward. Now, I know it may crimp the style of some of you, but there's nothing that can be done. So, with that being said, it seems that the show is functioning correctly. We did play some opening intro music and played around with the mic buttons a little bit. So, the studio is working correctly. The rest of the site, well, that's completely, excuse the term, fucked. It's just messed up beyond all belief. Now, will that stop us from tomorrow night? I don't know. Now, what is tomorrow night? Just to let you know, well, that's Screaming Horror. I know you're saying, whoa, Baron, Screaming Horror, don't you usually just play that show, say, at Halloween time? Yes, that's normally been true. However, here at the Baron Craze Kingdom of Hell, if you would, because this room is warm as hell that I'm in actually right now, it's a strange house, we have been getting a lot of psychobilly, some punk, a lot of horror-themed music lately. It doesn't actually fit any of our other shows. And occasionally we do play it on the Crypt, but not by enough of a frequency. It's just too much of it. So once a month, we're going to be doing Screaming Horror. And a lot of people seem to be really excited about that, and it seems to become our, I think, our seventh show in the wheelhouse. So, yeah, the Baron's Crypt here operates seven different podcast shows. Who the hell else does that? Let me think about that. Operates seven podcast shows, plus, this is great, run a website for somebody else, and write reviews and promote movies and promote bands. You know, after a while, it's nice when some of the bands and some of the fans out there of their movies can start paying you. I don't want to go into litigation. There's somebody listening out there. We sent you a nice polite letter. Let's not go to court because that's not going to turn out well for anybody. You know, you have to pay lawyer fees and all that kind of stuff. So it'd be nice when people actually pay. Well, anyway, let's get into the show, shall we? Now, tonight's show, just to kind of let you know, for all you fans out there who enjoy your countdown to Halloween, well, guess what? There's only 284 days to go. And believe it or not, there are some sites out there that are already teasing of what they're bringing up. I mean, it's incredible what's going on. Oh, I got to also wish, hey, you know, it's Edgar Allan Poe's birthday today. We'll be talking a little bit more about Poe when we get further into the show. So that'll be always great to do. I've always been a huge fan, of course, of Edgar Allan Poe. His work was fantastic always. In fact, let's see here. If you want to get right down to it, he was born on January 19th in 1809, and he passed away on October 7th in 1849. And just for us, we're going to be doing a really big celebration of Poe's death in October, so definitely be aware of that one. Just a purely note here, somebody's getting it figured out for me. How old would the good old boy be if he was alive today? He'd be a ripe 210 years old. By the way, some of his pictures, he actually looks about that age. I mean, he really does. But yeah, 210 years old. Whew. Well, that's a great way to celebrate a birthday, I guess. So anyway, speaking of birthdays, we do have to talk about death. Yes. On this show, we always started with the death notices, and that's what we're going to do right now. Now, again, I always butcher people's names. It's my trademark. So first up is Fernando Lujan. I think it's Lujan. Anyway, passed away on January 11th at the age of 79. He had been in some films called The Evil Wind Is Afraid in 2007. Also, Outside the Law in 1998, and Fear Does Not Go on a Donkey in 76. Now, that is a translated title, so we really don't know what the actual title should be, but that's how Google translated it. It was also in a film called Ghost Town in 65. Now, here's a name that I'm going to butcher so badly that I'm actually going to try the first name and maybe spell the last name. I'm actually getting a nod from somebody here in the room saying, yeah, why don't you do that? So the first name is Etsuko. And the next part of this is I-C-H-I-H-A-R-A. Passed away on January 12th at the age of 82. Was in a film called Village of Eight Gravestones in 77. Then we have Batson Lash. Batson Lash is actually a comic book writer. Again, if you contribute to horror in any shape, way, or form, we will put that person on the show because that's what we do here. He also passed away on the 12th. We do not have an age of his death. But he was a writer. He worked on Evil Archive. He worked on Ernie Archives. He also had the Monsters Meet on Court Street and other supernatural law tales. Very interesting. Mr. Monster Presents. Also, what else we have for him? Supernatural Law Secretary Mavis. I mean, this is quite strange. See what else. Let's scroll down our list. We have The Vampire Brat and Other Tales of Supernatural Law. All about the law for the man. Then we have The Werewolf of New York. Well, I guess he was a real wolf in court. So, there you go. And next up is Robbie. Oh, yeah, I'm going to spell this last name. T-U-M-E-W-U. Passed away on January 14th. Did one horror film called Blood Trace in 2010. Then it was Mark Arnold Yorman, passed away on the 14th. He was a unit publicist, and he worked on a horror film called The Tales from the Dark Side, the movie from 1990. Then it was Thelma, I'll just spell the last name, T-I-X-O-U, also passed away on the 15th. And she was in a film called Santa Sangre in 89. It was Carol Channing passing away on January 15th, at the age of 97. Oh, man. I mean, you get up in those ages, I mean, you start thinking about that. it's 3 years away from it. I mean, you know, the true ones that get ripped are the ones who die in like a month or a week before their 100th. I mean, I'm sorry to say, that's just not fair. That's just cruel. Anyway, she provided the voice on the animated series of the Addams Family, which ran from 92 to 93. She was in quite a few episodes as Grandmama, so you can definitely check that out. It was pretty much her only contribution to horror, but it's still the Addams Family, and it's still it may be animation, but it's still in the horror wheelhouse. Next up is William G. Anna knows? I think the G is silent, so I'm hoping I'm getting this one right. January 15th, he passed away. He was an actor. Did A Stranger Is Watching in 82, and also did some stunts. I'm going to just pick out a couple of these films because he has a lengthy stunt career here. The Forgotten in 2004, Lost Souls in 2000, Body Snatchers in 93, Jacob's Ladder, which is actually right now on Prime if you have that, but it does expire on the 31st, so be aware of that. The Ambulance in 1990 and Wolfen in 81. And that rounds out our entire list of the Remembrance. So, on this show, we usually play Harley Poe's The Hearst Song. Now, here's where we're going to cross our fingers again, our toes, and everything else we can cross, because we don't know if the site is working 100%. So we do have to play our transitional piece of music. We always play The Hearst Song by Harley Poe, because if we don't play it, you folks out there get really upset. You've already told me that you've been singing this song now at your toll booth at a bridge crossing, which I thought was really cool. The one of you actually has sung it during your entire time of working down at the seashore at one of those carnival kind of games, just kept singing the Hearst Song over and over. It makes it wonder how that kind of song went when people were trying to concentrate on losing so well. I mean, you guys give me some great stories of when you sing this song, so it's quite twisted. It's only about 2 minutes and 42 seconds long. We're going to try to play it right now. Hopefully everything goes right, and we'll be back with the show.
Sheet. From your head down to your feet, they put you in a big black box and cover you up with dirt and rocks. And all goes well for about a week, and then your coffin begins to leak, and the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, the worms play pinochle on your snout. And your teeth decay, and that is the end of a perfect day.
All right, so that was Harley Poe and the Her Song. Now, I wanted to give a really great way to announce our contest winners. I was hoping this was all going to work out well, and, you know, the site, it didn't let that happen. But I promised last week that we would be announcing our contest winners, and I am going to follow through with that. We're going to announce our winners. We're going to get in contact with them so we can send out their prizes to them. And those winners are, and they've been selected. Now, again, the way we played this game was if you were a fan or you listened to the Baron's Crypt, the Hard Times, or, and we even extended to, because some people have been kind of drawing away from Facebook, we kind of opened it up to a lot of people who, if you retweeted a lot of the post that I put up on Twitter, we figured let's open it to them, and that's what we did. So our winners are Tim O'Donnell and Isaac Thorne. Now, that's the names they use online. We don't know if those are their real names or what. We're going to be contacting both of them, letting them know that those are our contest winners. We're, in fact, going to be tweeting that out, that our contest winners for the Baron's Crypt and the Hard Times is Tim O'Donnell. No, that's not it. I'm reading it wrong. It's Tim O'Neill. Sorry, Tim. I just jumped there. I was looking at two things at the same time in two different windows, and I just did it wrong. So it's Tim, and it's O'Donnell, and then it's Isaac Thorne. So those are our winners. Congratulations to them. Again, if you had won in the past, you were not eligible to win again. If you're outside the 48 states, no, we can't ship everywhere. It's impossible. So those are our winners. We will be announcing that in just a moment on Facebook and anywhere else we can. Just putting down here, announce them. They'll tweet out there. So, hey, that's great. We're very happy to let them know that they have won. We will get in touch with them to get all their information so we can send out our prize boxes. We have been waiting on sending them out in the past because a friend of ours who contributes to put certain things in the box has been ill, and unfortunately they're not on the full mend yet to help us out to put more stuff in the boxes. So we're going to kind of load these boxes up with a few extra things that we have here, a couple maybe extra movies, and send them out to them, and you know, hopefully they enjoy them. I don't know if they have the movies or not, and if they do, well, I guess you get something to re-gift. And there you go. It's great. I always tell the winners that, hey, if you're at a horror con, you see me, just flag me down. I'd, you know, love to meet you in person or something. That's always great. All right, moving right along, let's get into the horror news presented by the Horror Times, if you would. Speaking of the Horror Times has a special show on Wednesday night, this coming Wednesday night. There is a special engagement of the Horror Times Unleashing Horror show. So that'll be airing, hopefully, on Wednesday night. All right, we want to note here that Lynn Shay, the new godmother of horror, if you would, is joining the reimagining and rebooting of The Grudge. She's obviously been the star of Insidious. She's got a ton of movies going on. I mean, just, she's rolling in it now. I mean, she's got role after role going on, and I think they're all like horror films, so that is really great for her that she's going to be part of this. Don't know what role yet. This is very early news that's just recently come out. You know, this is basically, you know, if you recall, The Grudge came out in like 2004, starred Sarah Michelle Gellar, who of the Buffy Vampire Slayer fame at the time. So it's going to be interesting to see how they redo this film again now. I do have to say, though, I mean, 2004 to now, I mean, we're not talking a lot of years, what, 15 years or something? It's not a lot. I mean, I remember when films, you know, say, oh, we're going to redo, and I hate to say this, we're going to redo Psycho. Okay, well, Psycho came out in 1960. The first reboot, which sucked all the way, and I don't think they ever really tried a major reboot again of that film, came out in 98. Well, that's great, because that's what? We're talking, what, 38 years later? I can understand that. When they're talking about redoing a film that's 15 years old, or I've even seen, we're going to start this movie again because it's only 5 years old. What? Are you nuts? I mean, how the hell did you come up with, well, gee, you know, the movie's only 5 years old. Let's redo it again. What? That starts worrying me. I mean, I always tell people, so, well, you know, we're out of thoughts of where to go for it. Oh, let me tell you where you go. You see, I have a collection like this, and I know there's a few other old-school horror fans, because there's a few new ones, but they don't have what we're going to announce here, their own horror library. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about a library that probably has about, I don't know, 300 books. I would say half of them are probably nonfiction, and the other half are fiction books. And I'm talking, you know, we've got the gothic kind of novels, and those gothic romance, because my girl's into that, so she's got those now. Oh, boy, talking about getting those on the shelf, going, no, you keep those in your room. Don't start messing them. What did I see the other day? I saw those books in my horror library. So much for me putting my foot down about that. She just decided, no, I'm putting them in there. Okay, whatever. I'm not going to argue about it. But my point is, you know, let's try to still stay with original horror. We like that. But unfortunately, New Line Cinema's also got into the act now. Final Destination reboot is in the works. That's right. We're going to start it all over again. They don't want to call it a reboot. That's one thing. It's not a reboot. It's not a remake. They're calling it a reimagining. Oh, now we're just going to play with words. Oh, I see. It's okay. So here's how you can handle this. Officer, I did not murder that person. They just had the unfortunate ability to run backwards into my knife 3 times. I don't know why they did that. They just did it. It's not murder. It's an accident. No one really believes that, but that's like the same thing they're saying here. Oh, no, it's not a reboot. It's a reimagining. Oh, of course. Of course. I see it all the time. Hey, I got a great thought. If it's a reimagining, we got some people out there that are artists. Why don't you go reimagine, you know, painting the Sistine Chapel? I mean, come on. Just buy a nice building and slap up a new artwork up there and just say, I reimagined the Sistine Chapel's painting. This is what I came up with. Could be really interesting how you come up with a new way of looking at it. So just to let you know there. Now, the people that are being involved in this to pen this thing have worked on some other things, such as the Collector franchise, although I don't really call the Collector a franchise. I really have a problem with that. Franchise is something when you get over, you get to 4 movies. I don't think the Collector franchise got past 2. Maybe a 3rd movie, but that gives you a trilogy, not a franchise. So I have a problem with that wording there. It's just something they do sometimes. And, of course, they also did 4 of the Saw movies. So, well, we know they know how to cut up a body, so that's good. But, look, they're gonna do this. Who knows how they're going to do it or what they're going to do, but they're going to come up with this stuff. All right. Got a nice little thing here. It seems from Universal Dark Universe franchise, which didn't go according to plan at all, was originally supposed to be a complete revamp of all the classic age monsters. Pretty much ended in total destruction. The Mummy, which now the director even admits is a complete disappointment of a film. I can understand when it first came out, he couldn't say that, but now he's like, listen, the movie, complete mess. I had somebody who's not really a horror fan watch this movie, and they were just like, I don't get it. I don't understand the movie. I said, join the crowd, because nothing else makes any sense. The movie, The Mummy, I really thought The Mummy was first the wrong movie to set out to go first. The Mummy is a slow building story. It takes a lot of time. And Tom Cruise is not a person you can take a lot of time to watch on screen. I'm sorry, he just, no, there's nothing there. So with The Mummy, you want maybe a more interesting story, something that really, you know, got it going. The Creature from the Black Lagoon would have been a great one. I would say Dracula would have been pretty interesting. Frankenstein, but Frankenstein has been done to death and back and every other way. I mean, Frankenstein is a huge draw. I mean, the book just celebrated its 200th anniversary. In 13 years, the 1931 film will be celebrating its 100 years. So there's a lot going on there. But it's nice to see that the director has bluntly admitted to that the film, it just floundered badly. And his quote's right here. It's from the THR site. I think that's the Hollywood Reporter site. "The Mummy wasn't what I wanted it to be. I'm no longer involved in that and have no idea what is going on with any of it. I look back on it now and, well, what felt painful at the time ended up just being an incredible blessing for me. I learned that I need to follow my own instincts, and when I can't fully do that, I don't think I can really truly succeed." So it's kind of like saying, hey, I don't want him to fall on his own sword, so to speak, but at the same time, maybe a director that didn't have a lot of a resume gets thrown into this, looks at all the potential, and it just flounders. It also sounds to me that there was a lot of studio pressure put on the movie. Perhaps he was saddled with people that he didn't want to work with, perhaps with the actors. He didn't want to be, you know, he figured those actors weren't the right people. And Tom Cruise definitely is not. Now, just a pure note to you, on Cinema Sins on YouTube, there is a great, funny expo of The Mummy. So definitely check it out. If you're having a down day, definitely watch that. All right, going right along here, we want to note a new film for Bill Moseley. I mean, he's pretty much been in the mainstay of horror ever since 1986, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, where he starred as Chop Top Sawyer. Well, he's got a film that he's working on here called The Boar, B-O-A-R. This particular film is kind of from the Australian outback with a new, brand new creature feature. This is all coming from writer-director Chris Sun. That's S-U-N. Basically, the kind of synopsis of the film is, in the harsh yet beautiful Australian outback lives a beast, an animal of staggering size with a ruthlessness, driving need for blood and destruction. It cares for none, defends its territory with brutal force, and kills raw with animalistic savagery, unlike anything seen before. So, sounds like a nice movie. Having kind of mentioned Charlie's Farm was a film that Bill Moseley did. I think he did, I'm not mistaken. Oh, I have to look that one up. I'm not too sure. But that was one of those films that I did come from the kind of Australian region. So, anyway, definitely something for you guys to check out, look up, and enjoy. So, really cool that that's going on. This kind of like a lot of people remember the Wolf Creek franchise. Another word that gets tossed around again. Franchise, four films or more. That's a franchise. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do with this. All right, just to let you know, and you should know this. This is a pretty well-known fact for people out there. We always know that Shout Factory, Arrow, Vinegar Syndrome, the Scream Team releasing, they get all those kind of weird movies out. Well, Blue Underground, not to be outdone, they are basically getting some things ready to be released. They had some great things come out last year. Two of those great things was a 3-disc collection, limited edition, 3D slipcovers, Maniac and Zombie. Both these titles had respective scores, impressive collector booklets. I mean, just everything thrown into them. Now, Maniac was very interesting because it had Joe Spinell's story on the Maniac thing. He was a kind of a cult actor. He worked on films such as Rocky. He was involved in the Godfather movies. He had worked with probably every big name star you can really think of. I mean, Al Pacino, Fred Williamson, I mean, who's a big draw at a lot of the horror cons out there. I believe he worked with Robert De Niro. I mean, he worked with a lot of talent, but he also had done some weird horror movies out there, and one of the weirdest is Maniac. Maniac had really bad time at things. But yet it somehow is still caught on as one of those grindhouse core kind of movies. And when I say grindhouse core, what I mean by there is grindhouse and it's hardcore. I just put it all together, grindhouse core kind of movie. You know, the shit that just hits the wall, stains it, and you go, oh, God, what the hell was that? And somebody says, oh, that's beauty, that's art, that's everything. Anyway, the story, the interview, if you would, on the Maniac disc is really an introspective that really should be watched to really get into Joe's mindset. It's just incredible. I think the thing doesn't really dwell too much on his personal life, which is great. I mean, his death, though, wow. He really had a horrible way of going. Really bizarre, a little bit sick and twisted. So it's quite interesting. Needless to say, he was a very good actor. Always played the character actors in films. So I think this month celebrates his death, if I'm not mistaken. So really cool to check out that particular movie. Also, of course, Zombie. I have mine right next to me, getting ready to play it shortly. But the Maniac one, that film has a ton of features. Let me tell you what they are. We got theatric trailers in there, TV spots, radio spots, outtakes, which was always fun, returning to the scene of the crime with William Lustig, Anna and the Killer, which has an interview with star Carol Monroe. Let's see, Death Dealer, which is an interview with the special effects makeup artist, who was Tom Savini. Dark Notes is the interview with the composer. The Maniac Men was the interview with the songwriters. Of course, again, the Joe Spinell story. And finally, a Mr. Robbie Maniac 2 promo reel. All right, so, I mean, again, not a lot of news this week. But, you know, on this show, we still have to talk about our horror icon. And, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about the comics and the collector's addicts. So let's get right into that so we don't forget it. Last week, we got into it pretty late, and we started rushing the show a little bit. So we're going to move around and get that in there right now. So on the comic side, again, horror comics in the month of July. Jeez, you see me running the year fast? In the month of January are pretty slow. Okay, so we want to note from Dynamite Entertainment, Mistress of the Dark, Elvira. There is the number 4 issue out, so you should be collecting these new issues. And right now, we should let you know there are 7 different covers to them. 7! I mean, I know there's fans out there that will collect all 7. I'm not that guy. Let me tell you, so when I get a horror comic, and I find out that I got cover B or cover C or cover D, I'm just like, wow, cool. I'll note that down. But I'm not about to run out there and go, well, I got to find A and B and C. I don't do that. Unless I'm looking for something so damn exact and I got to have every copy of a certain way, fine. But if I don't, I'm not going to worry about it. It's not my style whatsoever. I'll just let me have a moment here to get a little bit of the sip of the Long Island iced tea. Oh, boy. Somebody made that one good this week. All right. Also noting from IDW Publishing, the Haunted Horror hardcover Cry from the Coffin has been released. And from Titan Comics, Penny Dreadful, the hardcover volume number 1, the Awakening Artist Edition. And lastly, from Zenoscope Entertainment, Grim Fairy Tales of Terror volume number 4. Issue number 11. There are, I think, 2 of those, so be aware of them. All right, let's mosey on into our collector's attic and peel away some of the cobwebs. We would like to note that, let's see here, on Amazon, but this is also going with Jim Shore. Now, Jim Shore is a wood carving artist. He's got some incredible crafty hands there. And we always like to note artists on the show. And we got a huge following of you that like the Nightmare Before Christmas one. So this goes right out for you guys. We have the Nightmare Carved by Heart, which is going for $100. And then The Nightmare Before Christmas, Mayor Carr, which is really an interesting piece, to say the least, going for $85. Now, this one we had to put on the show for being Edgar Allan Poe. We have the Holly Carden. That's Holly, so H-O-L-L-Y, then it's C-A-R-D-E-N.com. We have an Edgar Allan Poe's Macabre Mansion Jigsaw Puzzle going for not a bad price, $35. So let's give you a little information here. So Edgar Allan Poe, Macabre Mansion, illustrates 20 of the author's short stories in one big creepy house. This is a creepy house, by the way. It looks very Victorian in build. It is hand-drawn, then colored in Photoshop. The image is then packed with details and clues of many of the favorite Poe stories. The hope is that basically if you listen to any audio recordings of tales, as you assemble the puzzle, or even color the puzzle, or color the poster, I should say, then you're all set. So, yes, now let me go over that. There's a puzzle, there's a print, and then there's one that you could color yourself. So you got three options. I mean, I'm getting the puzzle, by the way, just kind of let you all know that. That's what I'm getting. The puzzle is 768 pieces, and it will measure 18 by 24 inches once completed, which is not a bad size puzzle. I mean, look, I'm a guy who does puzzles that are 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000. I mean, I do monster-sized puzzles. I have a friend right now. He's working on a 15,000-piece puzzle, and I think he's completely nuts. Then again, I asked him why he was starting this puzzle, and then he told me, I have to get some surgery done, and I'm going to be laid up for a couple months. Ah, I understand now. I also have a friend who actually has a cabin up in the Pocono area, and he works on some big, long puzzles because he'll go up for winter and actually stay up there locked in isolation. It's very strange. And he will lay out and just, you know, do a huge puzzle himself. He goes, it's kind of tranquil, as he puts it. It's relaxing, peaceful. You know, no one's really coming knocking to the doors or anything, so to speak. And I'm like, but you got a pretty nice-sized cabin, so... Because, yeah, you know, I can do a couple different things up here. So I was like, yeah, so you're going to do a huge puzzle. And he goes, yep, that's what I do every year. I get the biggest, baddest puzzle I can find. I guess if you got friends that like to do some weird things in life, you let them do it. And it's better than going completely crazy. All right, speaking of crazy things, let's talk about Vinegar Syndrome. We have two films here, both limited edition slip covers to them. One's called Wacko, and the other one's called Party Line. Now, let's first understand, Vinegar Syndrome releases some unusual films. I really do mean that. I mean, the films that they're going to release are just some things that you go, what in the world were they thinking about when they came up with this movie? So, with that being said, let's talk about Wacko, which came out in 82. The cops tried to track down an infamous lawnmower killer. This is by director Gray Dunn Clark. What makes this movie interesting, I think, is a little bit of who's actually in the movie. George Kennedy and Joe Don Baker is in this movie. And, you know, while most of the actors have since passed on and such, the movie is, like I said, strange as hell. It's a horror comedy. Now, the reason I have personally got it for myself, and this may sound completely nuts, is I actually have the original movie poster. That's right. I have the original movie poster. Excuse me. So, with that being said, it's only right that I get the movie. Because, to me, I'm the horror historian. I'm a horror collector. I have to get every piece. For example, one of the pieces that I have in my collection, just a sidestep here for just a moment. We'll get back to Vinegar in just a second. Is I have in my collection, there are certain films that I have painstakingly tracked down just about every piece of the movie there is. And let me explain what I mean. I have the VHS tape. I have the DVD, the Blu-ray. I've got, let's see, the poster, the lobby cards, the press kit with the photos. I have everything. Everything. And this movie is shocker, the one I'm talking about. People are like, man, Shocker wasn't a great of a movie. I said, it doesn't really matter to me. That's irrelevant. This is the movie I really like, and I got all the pieces to it, so I'm very happy with that, especially having the lobby card ones. That was probably one of the harder things to find, but I'm really happy that I was able to obtain those. And finding the press kit, by the way, with the full set of photos in it, that's hard to do, too. The press kit is just something that's not given out to nowadays. Today, you get the press kit includes an electronic copy of your press release, some photos that are, you know, you would have to download them and print them out to get those, and then, of course, the trailer itself. This is the downside in the digital world where you're not getting a lot of these great pieces anymore. All right, our other film that we'd like to talk about real quick here, of course, is Party Line. Now, Party Line came out in '88. This is more of a thriller than a horror movie. A rich brother and his sister are crazed killers. Okay. She lures men into bed, and he attacks them and murders them. A detective is assigned to find the killers and bring them in. All right. So we understand basically what we're talking about in a film. We understand all the principal people. So we've got, let's see, Richard Hatch was in this movie. Richard Roundtree was in this movie. Greta Blackburn. And as I say these names, and a lot of you are going, wait a minute. These names sound familiar. I've heard these names in other horror movies, and that is absolutely true. You have heard these names. I'm not fooling around. Is another great way to connect with the listener, along with the viewers, and there's a lot going on there. Are they great movies? I would have to say they are selective tastes. Let's put it that way. And you will either enjoy it or you won't. But let me tell you, Vinegar, they release some interesting things. Every month they're rolling out something new. Let's go over to Servin Films, another interesting site. Now, over the past couple of days, something weird has gone on here. They released a bundle, the February bundle of theirs for $50, which is a really great price, which included the Next of Kin feature movie with an exclusive slipcover, The Invasion of the Blood Farmers, a Blood Farmer patch, and a poster signed by the director, Ed Adlum, and then will be shipped in a rolled-up tube, which is very good, too. Now, this thing sold out so fast. So I saw it online. I was going to go home, safely order it. And by the time I got home, the item I had in my cart, it was gone. It was sold out. So I was like, all right. I'll just buy the Next of Kin limited edition. That's what I did. And I don't know why. A few hours later, I decided, I said, you know what? I'm going to get the Invasion of the Blood Farmers Blu-ray while I'm at it. So I go back to the site, and lo and behold, the February bundle, which was sold out, was now in stock. And I was like, wait a minute. I don't understand, but went and I ordered the bundle. And in the process of doing that, I said, okay, I now have two orders with them. So I email Severin Films, and this is great customer service. This is great people. It's late. It's on a Friday night late. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I've gone to the doctors. I'm not feeling well. I get home. I forgot to order it when I got home, be honest. And then later in the night, I remember, oh, I forgot. And I went. And this is, you know, during this entire course of time that it was out of stock, then it's back in stock. Servin Films got in contact with the director and said, hey, would you mind signing another 100 copies of the poster? The director said, no problem. I'll be more than willing to do that. And hence, the bundle came back in. Now, having said that, is the bundle still available? I don't know. I don't think so. If you've missed it this time around, then you've missed it altogether. So it's something that you're going to have to look up. Now, let's talk about The Next of Kin for a moment. Now, this film came out in '82, again, you're going to say, well, '82, that's an interesting aspect of the movie. And I said, well, here's the thing you got to understand about this movie. It's one of those things, again, that you don't know about. You either know about it or you don't. It came out in 82, like I said. Originally premiered in, I think, 85 in Mexico. It's a horror mystery, about an hour and 30 minutes long. It's about 6.4 rating on the film. In a rest home for elderly people, a daughter reads her mother's diary. Soon events that are mentioned in the diary become to happen in the actual life of the daughter. And like, interesting movie. It's directed by Tony Williams. The writers were Michael Heath and Tony Williams, starring probably a cast that most people don't know anything about. Really not a well-known cast. However, the movie has kind of stayed the test of time, if you would. It really has. It's been one of those movies that's done pretty well for its entire existence. By flying under the radar screen by 5 miles, probably. Now, what makes this movie also very interesting, of course, is what is being bundled with it. And this is always interesting with certain films, is what they put together. Sometimes they take a very art house-like horror movie, and they'll completely flip it with something that's so crazily compared or parallel to that other movie. And in this case, it's Invasion of the Invasion of the Blood Farmers. I know you're saying, Baron, you're doing a lot of sayings here. I'll be honest. I'm not at 100%. I'll be honest. I'm probably at about 50%, if that. But this being Edgar Allan Poe's birthday, being a big show for us, you know, everybody's like, you know, they said to me, Baron, I'll get back to the Invasion of the Blood. Did it again. Invasion of the Blood Farmers. People actually said, I don't think you should do the show. I don't think you're up to speed. I don't think you're ready. And it said, yeah, but we have to do the show. And the reason we have to do this show, not only because it's Poe's birthday, but in 2 weeks' time, on February 1st, we will be having our 5th anniversary for this show. 5 years on the air. 5 years of delivering the great show. And that's a really big feat if you think about it. I mean, you know, you just have a lot going on there. So anyway, not feeling 100%. We got a ton of fluids here. So yes, not feeling well, but yes, I'm drinking alcohol. Why? Because that's how my body works. All right, so the Invasion of the Blood Farmers in 72. Came out on August 23rd of that year. Now it's got 3 stars out of 10, so it kind of tells you where you are on the movie. Somewhere in upstate New York, a young woman is terrorized by a group of rural farmers primarily interested in the harvest of blood. Well, excuse me, I got a lot of things going on tonight about the harvesting of blood, the blood dishing out, the blood of this, the blood of that. There's a lot of blood going on. The blood in the crockpot. Okay, so we've got some interesting things. So, again, this is directed by Ed Adlum, who also was the writer for this. Again, this is a strange movie. I'm not going to lie to you. It's very bizarre what's going on in this movie. It's an exploitation film. It's low budget. There's a lot of weirdness happening in the movie. And now, you've got to understand, as a director, Ed only did this film. This is his only time of directing. He was involved with some producing with some other movies called Shriek of the Mutilated in 1974. So that is pretty cool to note there. But it's just, again, one of those movies that, you know, that Severin is releasing. And I'm going to estimate, just kind of going down a list here of how they're releasing this film. It doesn't say, but I'm wondering if this movie is coming out of their Intervision department, which is a subset of Severin Films. It's where they release a lot of stuff you wouldn't ever hear of. And it's kind of interesting that that does happen. So those are your major movies there. And really that kind of takes you through everything. For those fans out there who like Department 56 items, Department 56 is starting to get ready, believe it or not, to release the next year's Hard Village, if you would, at countryandmoregifts.com. You can pick up the Addams Family House, now going for $110, down from its $165. Moving right along. Do want to note to all the John Carpenter fans out there that over at Gray Matter Art, the 4K restorations of the four John Carpenter's most iconic titles, The Fog, They Live, The Escape from New York, and The Prince of Darkness, all four of them have sold out. That's right. These were done really beautifully. Each one cost about $150. Some cost less, some cost a little bit more. They were all numbered of how many there were, so if you missed out, so sorry. The sale went very fast, very quickly, and it was just a massive attack on the site, if you would, from everybody wanting to get their little fix. All right. Let me get right back here to our main screen. Before we get into everything else, we are going to take a short little break, only because, like I said, the Baron is just struggling along here, so we're going to try to do a full two-hour show. When we get back from playing our music here, we are going to move right into our horror icon, touch on a few other horror tidbits, and we're going to call it a show because the Baron is dragging pretty hard here. I just wanted to do everything I could to get the show out to honor both Mick Garris, who's going to be at the New Jersey HorrorCon, and also honoring Edgar Allan Poe. With that being said, we're going to play a little piece of music here, and we'll be right back at it. And what we're playing here, just kind of scroll down a little bit. We're going to find something, you know, kind of interesting. Let's play for everybody out there. Here we go. See, this is how bad it is. I can't even like read the screen at times. The Cadaver Club, Vampires Ain't What They Used to Be. It's about 2 minutes long. We'll be right back after this.
Catch not for us, you are.
right. So that was Cadaver Club with Vampires Ain't What They Used to Be, which is so true in so many ways. All right. So let's just push along with our show here. All right. So each week on the Crypt Show, we getting back to doing this, our horror icon, someone we honor who's done a lot to contribute to the horror genre. Okay, so this week we picked Mick Garris. That's G-A-R-R-I-S. He'll be at the New Jersey HorrorCon with, I think, a free signing if you have a ticket pass to the show. So definitely check that out. He's got a new announced director project that he's going to be working on, one called Soy Miedo. It's M-I-E-D-O. He's just announced that. As for a film that is in post-production that he starred in as an actor, it was Sky Sharks. It's a comedy horror film, obviously, and it's in post-production. Basically, what we have here for a summary is deep in the ice of the Antarctica, a team of geologists uncovering an old Nazi laboratory still intact where dark experiments had occurred. In order to conquer the world, the Nazis created modified sharks who were able to fly and whose riders were genetically mutated, undead superhumans. The military task force called the Dead Flesh Four reanimated four U.S. soldiers who then fell in Vietnam and is put together to prevent world downfall. Okay. I mean, come on. You've got to admit that's got to either come from sci-fi or asylum films. It just sounds, maybe even Wild Eye released and got into it. But that sounds like something that they come up with. All right, moving right along. The last film they completed as an actor is called The Rift. It's got a 3.4 out of 10, 90 minutes long, a horror sci-fi thrill movie, not rated. An American military satellite crashes in eastern Serbia, and a team of U.S. and Serbian agents are dispatched to secure the remains of the satellite. But when they locate the crash, all is not it seems. Gee, isn't that the way it always happens? So many shows, so many times, right? This particular movie actually stars Ken Foray. Excuse me. And that's just pretty much one person here. And also Katrina Cass is also in this movie. All right, the last horror film he did as a director was Nightmare Cinema in 2018. Basically a 119-minute movie with a 5.9 out of 10 rating on it. Five strangers converge on a haunted movie theater owned by a projectionist, which is played by Mickey Rourke. Once inside, the audience members witness a series of screens that show them their deepest fears and their darkest secrets over the five tales. Okay, we've seen this type of movie before. We know about this. We understand what this is happening. But again, at 5.9, it's got to give you some attention to watch it at least. So again, five tales. You know that each director is doing their own little part. You have Joe Dante, and of course, there's Mick. The film again stars Mickey Rourke, Adam Godling, and let's take one more person out of here. How about Richard Chamberlain, just to kind of round it out. All right, moving along from this director, the best known work he's done, there's a couple. We have Bag of Bones from 2011. It's got a 5.8. It stars Pierce Brosnan, Melissa George, just to name a few. After his wife's sudden death, the best-selling author returns to his cabin retreat where he receives paranormal visitations and becomes involved in a custody battle. I can understand this. Think about this. Okay. We have a paranormal visitations and a custody battle. This has got to be cool, right? Can you imagine this? Your Honor, look, I don't think she's going to be a good mother to watch over the children. Give me one good reason. Easy. She's dead. She's a ghost. I mean, you know, look, the ghosts usually have the most fun in life, but let's face it. I don't think a ghost is going to be a good person to take over some babies and take care of children and such. I mean, first of all, if they don't even have the body function to hold anything and things just slip through them, they're going to be really bad at holding on to a kid. I mean, I don't know if that's about the movie. I haven't seen the movie in so damn long. I'm just having fun with you all out there. Next up is Desperation, a 2006 TV movie. 5.3. This actually, I think, comes from the Stephen King wheelhouse, be aware of that, starring Tom Skerritt, Steven Weber, and Charles Durning. We have here, when a sheriff arrests a writer, a family, a couple, and a hitchhiker and throws them in a jail cell in a deserted town of desperation, they must fight for their lives. Okay, sounds interesting enough. Sorry about that, folks. The vocals are really raw right now, and the body's aching, so I'm pushing it on. A lot of you who've listened to me throughout the years knows if the Baron is not feeling well, okay? So understand, if the Baron's not feeling well, the rest of me is not feeling well. Oh, yeah. Let's go on. So we got Sleepwalkers from 1992 with 5.2. This is a 91-minute horror movie. You must have seen it by now. A mother and a son team of strange supernatural creatures move into a small town to seek out a young virgin to feed on. All right. In 92 virgins. Let me see. You could find a couple. I mean, you're going to some small towns. It's a possibility, right? Obviously, there's Mick as the director, starring Brian Krause. Let's see here. Jim, I want to say Haynie. That's Haynie. Haynie. Again, I butcher names. I told you that. I will always butcher names. It's lucky I get my name right sometimes. Now, a couple of notes here. Did write some series that he worked with, many episodes in these series. The Fear Itself from 2008 to 2009, The Masters of Horror from 2005 to 2007, and She-Wolf of London, 1990 to 91. Now, his first feature horror film as a writer was The Fly in 89. It had a The Fly 2. I don't know if I said The Fly 2 in 89. 5 out of 10. Was directed by Chris, and it's W-A-L-A-S, starring Eric Stoltz, Daphne, oh boy, here's a name, Z-U-N-I-G-A. Basically, we have the almost human son called of Brundle Fly searches for a cure for his mutated genes while being monitored by a nefarious corporation that wishes to continue the father's experimentations. This movie grossed $20 million back then. As for the first horror film that he directed, as for a movie, well, that's easy. That's Critters 2. It's a horror comedy. Eggs of small furry alien carnivores are left behind on Earth, and after hatching, set their appetites on a town in Grover's Bend. So there you go. The film also stars Scott Grimes, Leanne Curtis, Terrace Mann, and Don Keith Opper, O-P-P-E-R. This film grossed $3.8 million and had a rating of a 5.4. Now, the first horror film he directed, which was an episode, so predating a lot of other things. We have here, as from Amazing Stories, Life on Death Row. It was an animation adventure comedy, 5.7 out of 10. A murderer on death row finds himself infused with the incredible power to heal by touch. In a desperate race to halt his execution, builds to a miraculous climax. This film actually starred Patrick Swayze. So just kind of throw that out there. And Kevin Hagen. All right. First film as a writer/producer was a film called Coming Soon in 82. Documentary horror sci-fi, 5.7 out of 10. Scenes and trailers from nearly 50 of Universal's greatest horror films. Directed by John Landis, starring, basically, a lot of people who starred in movies. Okay, so I'm just going to say that Jamie Curtis was in a movie, that it was Universal, or somehow she was connected to it, so she's in part of this trailer, in this film, this documentary. First horror film as an actor, rounding out everything he's done, was The Howling. From 1981, this film got 6.6, a bizarre and near-deadly encounter with a serial killer, a television newswoman is sent to a remote mountain retreat when the residents there decide to get a little toothy with everybody. Obviously, Joe Dante was the director, starring Dee Wallace, Patrick McNeil, Christopher Stone was also in this movie. It earned, I think, at least $17 million. And what makes this film most interesting is that his role comes at the end. Spoiler alert, in the movie, when our werewolf character there turns into a werewolf on live television, okay, how do I put this? Actually get to see Mick laying on a couch reading a TV guide going, what in the hell are you watching? It's the evening news. And right back, you know, it's a great little cameo appearance, if you would, just a small one. But it's so clever how it's just, he's just there in the scene. And that really marked his first entry, if you would, into the genre, especially just going from an acting standpoint. So, I mean, he's done it all. Acting, directing, you name it, the man has done the role or the job or the position. So that is really, really cool for him and really great for the fans to kind of honor and recognize him. Again, you want to meet him in real life, that's easy. You're going to go to New Jersey Horror Con at the end of March. You're going to stay there for 3 days. You're going to buy a ticket. You're going to have a good time. And you're going to see this great star they have. And I'm looking forward to meeting with him, too. This is going to be one of those great moments to have. And you definitely don't want to miss it by any means. Okay, so that rounds out our horror icon. Trying to figure out what was next. Oh, yes. Here we go. Let's talk a little bit about Edgar Allan Poe. Now, Edgar Allan Poe has inspired so many films that if he was able to be alive today, or at least be alive when these films were all being made, the man would be a multi-million-dollar person. That or he would be in debt to 17 bars. Take your choice. I mean, the man could have probably drank most of Napa Valley away and still be looking going, dear boy, I need another drink because I am very, very sober. I'm not drunk at all, and I don't need any kind of hell. I'm not a drunk. He's been on Dr. Phil 15 times. I mean, let's face it. So his films, his books and stories have influenced filmmakers for countless years. I mean, they really have, if you think about it. A lot of people remember The Raven from 2012. It wasn't a great movie, but wasn't a terrible movie either. There was just some things that they had made up about Poe that, you know, it's the Hollywood horseshit. And what I mean by that is that, how do I put it? You know, Poe's riding this, he's riding a horse, he's really athletic, he's doing all these things. Not Poe. That wasn't Poe's style by any means. You got other ones that, you know, The Death of Poe that came out in 2006. So you got, you know, again, a lot of filmmakers for one of their thesis projects will take an Edgar Allan Poe story. You know, one about getting somebody walled up in the wall or The Raven or something like this. You've got Lunacy from 2005, Usher from 2004. The Crow actually kind of has a little bit of influence from Poe's work in there because of The Raven. You get that. So The Crow in 94. Let's see, The Pit and the Pendulum has been done, I don't know how many times. We've got one from 91 with Lance Henriksen that does have a lot more nudity probably than any of the others. Two Evil Eyes from 1990. It was based on, I think, two of Edgar Allan Poe's short stories, if I'm not mistaken. House of Usher. I mean, come on. The Black Cat. The Specter of Edgar Allan Poe. The Murders in the Rue Morgue. Hell, The Murders in the Rue Morgue. Not only did a book inspire a movie, but it also inspired a metal band to have a song about it. In fact, a lot of metal bands have played off of Poe's work of inspiration. There have been so many tracks over all the years. It's incredible when you think about it. Then we have the oblong box that's there. Then we have Spirits of the Dead, the Tomb of Lygium, Castle of Blood, the Mask of the Red Death, the Haunted Palace. Excuse me. The Raven from 63, of course. Tales of Terror from 62. Right now we're into the Roger Corman era, if you would. The Crematorial Burial, Pit and Pendulum with Vincent Price, Telltale Heart, The House of Usher. What else can we tell you? The Black Cat from 41, The Fall of the House of Usher from 1950. The Crime of Dr. Crespi from 35, The Raven again. Now, The Raven actually gets a couple tries at this film. I mean, they remade it in 35, The Black Cat in 34, The House of Usher in 28, and then The Avenging Conscience, Thou Shall Not Kill from 1914. Really? I'm looking at it right here, and it says 1914. What do I do? I transpose it all the way. Prevented from dating a sweetheart by his uncle, the young man turns his thoughts to murder. This is probably the earliest form of Edgar Allan Poe's work. I've yet to see this particular one. It is available on disc, but it's very hard to find, so it's one of those things, if you find it, congratulations. Probably if you look on YouTube, you would find it. You just have to really search it out well, because again, it's Edgar Allan Poe. We're talking about a ton of films that have been made about the man or his work and such. So there's always something going on, and you just can't kind of lay down your guard to it. He's done so much when he was alive that he just carries on. I mean, people are always going to the place he lived at or visited, looking for the inspiration, looking for that soul, looking for everything. And it's been very difficult to find all that. And when we lost him, we lost, you know, a major horror icon. But people always thought, oh, we'll never replace him. I disagree. I think there's always talent out there that's going to rise up, and it's going to be a nice simmer, and it's going to boil over, and then rise up in your bedroom and want to rip out your heart. And then put it into perhaps a blender, grind it up and feed it either to the family dog or to any police officer that shows up the next day. Here, officer, here's a nice drink for you. And you drink that down. Oh, yeah, there you go, getting rid of some evidence, right? But again, that is that. Now, I do want to get into our odd news. I cannot forget that because I really do have something quite strange to tell you all. Okay, now, a lot of things we're talking about tonight involve the one word, blood. And I am always giving out that odd bit of news out there to everyone. Well, there is a new business out there, and only in America, and let's face it, I want you to really think about this as we talk about a new controversial startup company that charges you only $8,000 for your veins to be filled up with young blood. That's right. Young Blood now claims to be up and running in at least 5 cities across the United States. Now, I would like you to let that sink in for a moment. Just let that blood think about that pulsating through your body and think about you getting a recharge, if you would. All right. The startup company is called Ambrosia. It charges $8,000 to fill your veins with blood for of young people. Is now accepting PayPal payments for the procedure online. The person who came up with this is a Stanford graduate who founded Ambrosia, told the Business Insider magazine, this week the company was setting up and running in 5 cities. Okay, so vampires, be aware, there are new blood banks for you to go and get that blood. Basically, they're saying Ambrosia recently completed its first clinical trial designed to assess the benefits of the procedure, but is yet to publish the results. Honest to God, that is very, 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 very true, okay? So, They're wanting you to pay them $8,000, okay? And it's insane. You're going to pay $8,000 for this concoction, okay? And I'm trying to find it right now. I'm trying to pull it up. I know everybody's probably slamming his site left and right. Okay, we're looking at it right now. Ambrosia Health. You can look it up on your site at ambrosiaplasma.com. This is a real legitimate thing. I don't know how legal it is. I really don't. I have no actual clue how legal this company is or what they're doing is, you know, we're talking about blood. We're talking about something that can be easily contaminated. So it's quite strange to say the least. You know, they're calling the blood is the next big government-approved drug. Now, think about this. We're talking about blood, and now we're talking about it as an approved drug. Now, as a person who has had a few fights, who has played some sports and has had bloody lips and things, there are times, I'll be honest, you know, licked up the blood, you know, sucked it in, you know, wiped it off the chin, whatever. Okay? And I've been more than a few times have I bitten my tongue or bitten the inside of my mouth and, whoa, there's blood there too. And you taste it, and I guess in a weird way you get a charge from it. Kind of strange, but okay. A little blood fetish going on there. Basically, this is a startup company, again, that wants to fill the veins of older people with blood from younger donors, hoping the procedure would conquer aging by regenerating the body's organs. Say what? Now, there's actually very little to no evidence that actually says any of this would work. And again, think about this. Now, seriously, take a moment. I want you to really think about this. This is kind of crazy as hell, right? And it's odd news, and I'm talking about it, and I'm actually getting kind of worked up over it. So, I want to pump in young blood of you know, plasma into your system, okay, that will, I believe, or this company believes, I should say, this company believes will help conquer the aging process and let your organs inside your body begin to age backwards and thereby absorbing this into them. This is insanity. I mean, this is a company that's going to be shut down pretty fast. This doesn't make any sense. Basically, I think what they're trying to tell us is that the company is run by Elizabeth Bathory reincarnated, a woman who believed that if she bathed in the young blood of virgins, she would always stay young. Okay? I mean, it's really nuts. I just don't know who would give them. Now, they got two options listed. 1 liter of young blood would be $8,000. But hey, if you go with two, it's only $12,000. Oh, wow, this must be great. I can't wait to see what idiot decides to go with this first. I mean, this is completely nuts. Anyway, like I said, in 2017, they enrolled people in a clinical trial designed to find out what happens when the veins of adults are filled with blood from younger people. While the results of that study have not been made public, the owner of the company said that they were really, really positive. Oh, well, cool, dude, hang loose, because it sounds like a great project. I can't wait to see which district attorney arrests you first, because it's going to be fun. There's no scientific evidence to suggest that treatments could help anyone. Several experts many people have raised red flags about this. Because the Food and Drug Administration has approved blood transfusions, the Ambrosia's approach has been able to continue as an off-label treatment. It appears to be a significant interest and is able to continue to move along swiftly, as one person stated here, for one primary reason right now, a shutdown. That's right, since the FDA is not open, here's a business that's going, come on in, $8,000, and you got some free blood all out there. So no one knows how the clinical trial went. There's no information. on their site, they've got a tab called Science, okay, which when you roll all the way down, these are the following boxes that are available. Donors, science, background. Okay? Here we go. The donors, the donor plasma is screened rigorously. Potential donors should contact their local blood banks to give blood. We do not work directly with the donors themselves. Oh, well, so the vampires are a little out of luck so far. Over in the science category, a clinical trial in 2016 studied the benefits of young plasma. Period. That's it. That's the entire thing. I've never read any clinical trial anywhere at any time that is that short. It's, hey, there was a study. We studied it. And that's it. Oh, how nice. And basically, you know, a little background about the company and such. So, this is our odd news segment. And, you know, I told you, we always come up with some pretty weird things. This one has got to take it to the max level. It just has to. I can't see why it wouldn't be the maximum thing out there. So with that being said, you have to admit, folks, that is the oddest one. So if you want some young blood, this is what you're looking for. Now, look, I've heard of cougars out there, you know, women and such, looking for the young stud, looking for the young guy. I haven't heard of many, I don't know, vampires, so to speak, looking for the young blood right now. I mean, they probably always are looking for it. But this has got to be interesting, going, hey, Peter. Yeah, George, listen, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, man, I'm going down to give blood. Why give blood? Well, man, I need some money. Oh, I understand. But, you know, my blood's going to be coursing through some veins. Oh, that's interesting. I'm going, I think he's been smoking too much. Meanwhile, on the other side, you have two people over there. You're going to say, let's just call one of them Mitch and one of them go, I don't know, Samantha. And they're going, what are we doing this week? Well, let's look through the catalog for all the young blood that's out there. Oh, look at this one. He seems to have come from a nice home. Very clean, very nice. I think this will be a terrific one. I'm going to get this leader. What are you going to get? Well, I saw this one over here, and I think this will be an excellent flavor right here. I think this will do very well for me. Oh, look. Oh, it does crew. What is your address? Track. Oh, this is great. Says he's always running if everywhere he's got to go. Well, that's terrific. And yours is just growing everywhere. Very good blood. And let's pump this into our system this weekend. Okay. Hello. The crazy people are running everything now. It's official. So, yeah. Completely nuts there. I think you all know that very much. Okay. Noting something else that's very important. I should note it to for you all out there. The original Ghostbusters will return, says Ernie Hudson. As you may even know, that there's been a teaser trailer going around for Ghostbusters, a sneak peek. Everybody's probably seen it by now. If you haven't, I don't know what you've been doing with yourselves. You definitely should have been looking at it. This is going to be directed by Jason Reitman, who is the son of the original director, Ivan Reitman. You know, they're going to make this thing. It's looking about basically, I think this year marks 35-year anniversary, so definitely got to check that out in that way. And the fans are definitely wanting it. Now, what also makes this interesting is that Ernie Hudson is going to be at the New Jersey Horror Con. You know this is going to be the top question he is going to get asked. And I think it's a great way that he's going to be out there in advance in some way, you know, pumping up this movie. I definitely see a lot of Ghostbuster-themed things going on. It's rumored that he will be dressing in costume for the photo ops, so that's going to be very cool for him. And again, it's 35 years. This year marks the 35th anniversary. So when this film comes out next year, you're talking about, what are we talking about? Probably, what, it'll be the 36 years? I mean, this is incredible. You know, I don't know why it took so long. There's a lot of different rumors for that. This film originally came out in June. I'm just looking it up right here, in June. So that's the big anniversary month for this film. I guarantee you there's going to be a lot of merchandise coming down the road for Ghostbusters. Probably Ghostbusters 2 will also filter into that a little bit. But you're definitely going to have a lot of merch coming down the road Maybe not that much this year, but definitely a ton for next year. I mean, Spirit Halloween got into it really big this past Halloween with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, which is right behind me over here. Nice little figurine. It's heavy as hell. I mean, I got to be honest with that. And then there's the Slimer one, which had a tabletop one. And there was also this big prop. I mean, it's heavy, about $80 worth. And that was actually out the year before, and I got my hands on that one too, which is now very hard to get, and has actually gone up in price. So you have those too. There's tons of figurines out there. Mezzo Toys have put out a collection set a while back. It was $300. I was like, a little out of my price range, guys. But yeah, there's a lot with the Slimer figurines and a lot of the lights. There's been the a string of lights that were put out for Ghostbusters. The LPs have been out for a while now. There's a lot of different things. So it's only a matter of time to see what else they're going to release there. Now, I got to be a little bit honest, of course. When you go and you do look at your original Ghostbusters posters, it's a little sad. Because on the cover, we have Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ivan Reitman. We do not have Ernie Hudson. And for a long time there, Ernie Hudson's character in figurines and everything else had not been made at a good clip, if you would. It had always been pushed back or it wasn't available. And this has always been a kind of a backlash. I always have had a small problem with it. He wasn't a main person. He comes on later in the show, but he's, you know, he's well qualified and he, you know, makes the film work and everything else. And his character is treated with respect and is not a bumbling idiot or anything. But for the most part, the merchandise never really gave him any props or quantities. So I thought that was really bad. But since then, of course, has been, you know, really good for his career. And of course, you know, it's really great that he's going to be at the New Jersey Horror Con, obviously providing details, probably for the guests and mostly some filmmakers too. So that is really cool also. Okay. Moving right along here, just closing down certain things we do not need to get ourselves confused too much, if you would. We want to note that there is, coming from MPI Media Group, the production of a highly anticipated documentary called Master of Dark Shadows. This is a really cool project. This is, you know, obviously about the comprehensive celebration of the legendary dark daytime series, Dark Shadows. I've got quite a bit of Dark Shadows memorabilia all around my house. This is a feature documentary which was shot in New York, L.A., London. It includes numerous interviews with actors, filmmakers, and other people. It's being narrated by Ian McShane. It offers insight to Curtis himself, that's Dan Curtis himself, in addition to an Oscar-winning writer-producer, Alan Ball, who was involved with True Blood, screenwriter William F. Nolan, who was in the Trilogy of Terror, and so forth. There's a lot of people here, a lot of really old interviews, classic interviews. You know, this thing also came out like in 1966, was phenomenal and lasted as long as it did. So it was very good. So definitely something for everybody to check out. I'm not sure when they're going to be dropping this, but I think sooner than later it's going to be happening as all the information is coming out about it. So it's definitely something that, as horror fans, you should care about it because it's a foundation. But what happens is often people don't care about it, because they're just, oh, well, you know, I mean, who cares? It's you know, before my time. I don't give a damn about it. And that's a real negative attitude. That's not how you want to look at things. It's just not how you want to have things done in life itself. So before we also forget, of course, we need to do our history of horror. Now, our history of horror is done slightly different. We have gone through a list. We are working always to make it better, to make it cleaner. We just started doing the Testament of Horror on the Horror Times website. So, with that being said, let's scroll on down to the 19th and tell you who was born, who died, and what films were released. All right, so we have Logan Lerman, who appeared in such films as The Butterfly Effect and Number 23 in 92. Then we've got Sean Wayans, W-A-Y-A-N-S, who, of course, starred in Scary Movie and Scary Movie 2, probably a bunch of other things. I mean, again, our notes are very old. We are right now trying to get our notes built up, get them out there, get them edited right. So, again, this is going to start slow, folks. And it's starting slow for a couple of different reasons, and we'll get to that as soon as we're done with this one part here. We got William Ragsdale, who was a star of Fright Night, Fright Night 2, Frankenstein, The College Years, The Reaping. And let's just pick out one more. Hey, how about 1809? The Master of Macabre, Edgar Allan Poe. And his famous poem, The Raven, was based on Charles Dickens' pet bird, a raven. As for those who passed away, we have Gordon Hessler, the director of such films as Tales of the Haunted, Kolchak the Night Stalker, Cry of the Banshee, and let's see here, Scream and Scream Again, Oblong Box, and a lot more. He passed away in 2014. Moving right along, we have Suzanne Pleshett, who co-starred in such films as The Power and The Birds. Who else can we give you here? Let's go with somebody from the earliest point. In 92, Glenn Langan, title role in The Amazing Colossal Man, and also in The War of the Colossal Man and Women of the Prehistoric Planet, passed away. And lastly here, our films released. Now, we went through this list. We scoured it very well, and we have come up with what we believe is the best list. We have The Lodger in 44, The Face of Marvel in 46, Straightjacket in 64, Brain Dead in 1990, Tremors in 1990, Mutant Species in 1994, From Dusk to Dawn in 96, Godzilla, the Space versus Space Godzilla in 94, Godzilla versus Destroyer in 95, Twilight Vamps in 2010, and The Hitcher in 2007. So you guys are starting to like this. You're starting to get into what we're doing there, and we do thank you for that, as always. And I think that really almost brings us to a close. Again, I'm just starting to feel better, so I'm not at 100%. So I do apologize for that. We've had an interesting night to get this show on. It has not gone very much according to plan, if you would, and I do apologize for that. It's just been that weirdness. So with that, we're going to close the show early tonight. I know, we're 26 minutes from the end, but I'm not 100%, and I'd rather give you 100% all the way through. So we're just going to play a close-out track here and call it a night, and that's it. So with that being said, let's just find something on our list here. And somebody did just send a question in, wanting to know, will we be playing the Ave Santi track that we used to play as our intro to our show way back when? And yes, we will be doing that. That is a 3-minute track. I'm going to refrain from playing it, even though the urge is high on my list to do that. But I want to wait and let it go off on the first. I think that would be a great way to kind of really intro our show. So with that being said, let's just find something here to play. And then we'll just close it out. I'm looking for something particular. Oh, here we go. We are going to play, we're going to play the best thing we got here, the longest track that we have loaded here. Black Diamonds, Vampires of the Night. It's about a 4-minute long track. It'll close us out. Thanks for tuning in to Baron's Crypt 224th show. We're cutting it early tonight. I'm not at 100%. We've had a rough night here with Block Talk Radio, taking a lot of my stress. And that's it for the show. So, thanks for tuning in.
bills to pay.